have to leave. Some of you can stay here. Look at Matthew chapter 12. Matthew 12, 36. Matthew 12, 36 says, "But I say unto you," this is Jesus speaking, "that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned." All right, I'm going to deal with a Sunday school lesson that includes the doctrine of the judgments, but it's primarily the idea of personal accountability. And personal accountability, that is where you have to give account. You are going to have to give an account. Now, before we get into that, I want you to look at what he says here, that every idle word, every idle word. Think about idle words. You know what an idle word is, don't you? You know where you didn't think it over before you said it. You just threw it out there, you know, and we're all guilty of that, aren't we? We all throw out words when we probably shouldn't have said nothing. They say that a fool is considered wise if he had just shut up. They think he's smart. If you spoke less, people think you're smart. And the more you speak, the more people know how smart you're not. So, and that is true. And they say that you can tell a liar by how much he says, by how much he talks about. If he elaborates an awful lot, then he's lying. And of course, you know, people know more than I know about how to tell when somebody's lying. I can never tell. I don't understand why. But people can lie to me all day long and I won't know it. Even somebody who's lied to me several times, I'll still think they're telling me the truth now. And I don't know why I'm that way. I don't see it. I don't pick up on people's dishonesty. And that's a shame. You know, I guess we ought to be a little bit wiser. But I was just thinking about this concept of words. And the reason why I say that is because I work in the courts and we have the judges and they're constantly, especially this one judge he's a very wise judge, I consider. And he always has these kids that say, you know, well, I've learned my lesson. I'm going to do better and I'm going to straighten myself up. And he always tells them, we don't judge you by what you say. We judge you by what you do. Basically, you can say anything you want and I'm not even listening. I don't care what you say. I care what they told me you did. And that's how I'm going to judge you. And that makes a lot of sense. That makes perfect sense for us because we can't tell when somebody's lying. Now, maybe you can. I know that they have a science about this. You notice if you try to cross the border, they don't search your car every time. In fact, very rarely, I don't think I've ever been searched coming this way. Well, I take it back. I was searched one time, but I'm not going to get into that. Normally, 99% of the time, they don't search a car and they don't bring the dogs around and they don't open up your glove box and they don't look underneath your seat. Normally, they just ask you a couple of questions. They'll say something like, "Where are you coming from? And where are you headed? And what were you doing there?" Just simple little questions. And the reason why is because these Border Patrol interviewers are trained at paying attention to how you answer. They can tell. They have all kinds of little tricks they know about how you move your eyes when you talk or how you move your head or how you cock yourself. They know. They got a way. And if there are any of the signs, well, then they'll pull you aside and they'll search you. And listen, if you got nothing to hide, well, then they can tell pretty much right away. They can tell. And it is actually very efficient. It's very effective. And that's why a lot of the smugglers go to the trouble to smuggle things in cars that the people don't know they're smuggling things. Because then the people answer the questions and they get right through. And this happens. People are actually smuggling things in because they don't know. If somebody knows that there's a car headed north, well, they'll put things in that car without the person driving knowing about it. And they get it up here and they take it out and nobody knows the difference. But because they can tell when somebody's lying. But I can't. And most people can't. And in fact, you're better off just to assume everybody's lying at all times and pay no attention at all to what they say. But what if you could always tell? What if you always knew? What if you had the ability to see right past the words and look right into the heart Like it says, the Bible can discern the thoughts and intents of the heart. What if you could tell all of your underlying motives? Well, then you could actually make some judgment on words, couldn't you? And that's what God says about words. What he says here, listen to what he says here. Every idle word. Then he says, verse 37, for by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. You see, now that goes against our common way of thinking. We think, I'm not judging you by your words, I'm judging you by what you say. It's always more important, you know, it's easy said, it's hard done. It's much easier said than done. We always know somebody can say whatever, but we want to see them actually bring it out. And so we think it's a little bit contrary to our way of thinking when Jesus says, whosoever shall confess me before men, him will I confess before my Father which is in heaven. Meaning that salvation does not depend upon your works. It depends on what you say with your mouth. But can't somebody say with their mouth something that's not true? Yes. But if God is the one judging and he sees all the thoughts and intents of the heart, then what you say with your mouth that comes from a genuine heart, then the words matter. And this is what God is saying, words matter. What you say matters. In fact, it's going to make the difference between your eternal salvation and your eternal condemnation. Your words. How does he say it over there in Romans chapter 10? Come on, I know you can quote it. For if thou shalt confess with thy mouth the Lord Jesus, and believe in thy heart that God hath raised him from the dead, thou shalt be saved. Now there are the two points. Confess with thy mouth, and believe in thy heart. Then it says in verse 10, for with the heart man believeth unto righteousness, and with the mouth confession is made unto salvation. So when you have the heart right, and then you have the confession, that turns into the greatest thing that happens on this earth. Right. Actual salvation. It's an event that happens in this life. It's salvation. It ought to be the event all churches are talking about this morning. It's not the event that all churches are talking about this morning, but it ought to be because it's the main number one thing in the whole wide world. This event called salvation, the actual personal salvation of people. And I know we can look at all kinds of things that seem important, like whether Iran gets nuclear weapons. That sounds very important. Or who wins the election, or who knows what. What you think is really important because we see it on the news what it's for. But you know what God is looking at? Hey, somebody got saved over here. Somebody got saved last week. Somebody got saved last week. You know what that caused a party in heaven. Somebody was rejoicing up in heaven. Something was going on in heaven. And who cares whether Iran gets nuclear? Well, I care. It is important whether Iran gets nuclear weapons or not. One way or the other. The thing that God is looking at is the important stuff, when that's the stuff that has to do with the salvation of souls, the spiritual stuff, the stuff that's going to make a difference in eternity. All of that stuff is important to God. And the other stuff, the stuff that just has to do with stuff that's going to be limited to this earth, not so important. Not so important. And so what God says here is, your words are important to God. I guess I need to repeat that. Your words are important to God. It's going to make a difference between yourself. You know what he says? You got to confess. You have to confess me before men. That's very interesting. Why can't you just believe in your heart and not confess? He didn't say whoever believes in his heart is going to be saved. He says whoever believes in his heart and confesses with his mouth. Oh, I know. Somebody's got an exception out there. Say, well, how about somebody who doesn't have a mouth? I'm going to let God deal with the exceptions. I'm telling you, there's a point here about confession, about saying something with your mouth right here on this earth. And if it hadn't been said so clearly in the Bible, we might have had a problem coming to it philosophically, how important it is. But see, Jesus just made it easy for us. He said, look, you got to confess me with your mouth. I want to hear it out of your mouth. You got to say it to somebody else. And so we can tell you that if you want to be saved, you're going to have to believe in your heart and confess with your mouth. And that's why we're constantly asking people, have you believed? Do you believe? And if people won't say it with their mouth, there's something lacking still. Now, somebody might say, well, you know, what about on a deathbed conversion and they didn't get a chance to say it to anybody? We're going to have to let God decide that. Because what God said was, you confess with your mouth. Jesus says, if you will confess me before men. In other words, what comes out of your mouth matters. And what we're trying to do, and this is the effort that we have as Christians, we want people to get saved. And I know that doesn't seem like a terribly important thing to a lot of people in the world, but to God it's important. And truth be known, to people who actually do get saved, it's important to them that other people get saved. And if you want people to get saved, what you got to do is get them to believe in their heart and confess with their mouth. And that's why it's so important that you understand what happens over there in China. You get somebody in China and they're secret Christians. They've got to be secret. They'll lose their life, perhaps, if they come out in the open. Or over there in Iran, you've got secret Christians. They're underground. And over there in Russia, we had secret Christians, and we have all kinds of things. And it's all over the world. It's not just in certain little pockets. We're talking about all over the world. People are in terrible trouble if they confess Jesus with their mouth. And Jesus doesn't make it one slight bit less important for them. Now, if you confess, you stand up here and say, I confess that Jesus is my Savior. We'll ask anybody already accept the Lord and want to follow Him in baptism, and they just got to stand up and say, I did. I accepted the Lord. They don't even have to make a speech. We'll ask them the questions, and they can just confess that way, and that's fine because it's important. And it's easy here. It's easy. It's a whole lot easier here than, say, in China or North Korea. Whole lot easier. But it doesn't make any difference whether it's easy or hard. Salvation depends upon believing in your heart and confessing with your mouth. And that's confessing to other people. So what Jesus is saying is it matters what you say to other people in eternity. This is deep. This is where the rubber meets the road. This is what matters. It has to do with your words in this world. What you say to other people. Why can't we just have our faith to ourselves before God? Why do we have to be out there? Why do we have to suffer reproach for the name of Christ? Why do we have to be embarrassed? Why do you, in a university setting, have to be humiliated by the professor? Why is that important? Well, maybe it doesn't matter that you know why it's important. But it's important to God. He wants you to be humiliated. I know that sounds bad, but He wants you to suffer some reproach for His name. He wants you to commit. It's like in a marriage. Now, I know there are a lot of people who think, you know, they're just shacking up and they think, well, there's no real difference, you know, because there's no, just because there's no piece of paper and there's no legality or whatever, we're just shacking up and they think there's no difference. But let me tell you something. There's a difference between somebody who's willing to stand up in front of a crowd and commit. Sign a piece of paper by law and say, I'm committing, and here's my commitment. This is what I'm saying, and I say it out in front of everybody. This is my wife. I'm taking her. She's mine. And someone who's not willing to commit for whatever reason. Let's suppose they got all kinds of rational, very, very good reasons. They're not willing to commit. They're not willing to sign on the dotted line. And I realize marriage has become so small in our society. It's become so insignificant. People get married and then get unmarried several times in their life, and it's like kids don't even know who their real dad is, or the person that they're calling their dad is not really their dad. And that's pitiful. That really is pitiful. That's a shame. It's not the right way for it to be. And it's almost unavoidable in our society. If you're going to get married, you're taking a chance. You're taking a chance on it all falling apart. Don't judge people who have been married and then been divorced and then been remarried. Don't judge them too harshly, because a lot of times there's just not anything you can do about it. There's no fault divorce, and it's just, but let me tell you something. We ought to all still recognize the difference between somebody who with their mouth says, I take thee as my lawfully wedded wife, to have and to hold and all that stuff till death do us part. They say it with their mouth in front of everybody. That makes a difference. It makes a difference because they declared it. They committed. That's their statement. And that's what Jesus is saying. By your words matter. So he says, commit to me. He says, stand up and tell everybody you're a Christian. You believe in Jesus Christ. You say, yeah, but that's embarrassing. I'm not a public speaker. Did you know that speaking in public is the number one fear of people? So how can God expect us to say these things in public? But God does. What he says is, for by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. It is interesting how we are so, and especially religious people are so interested in works. In Spanish they have a statement, they say, de los dientes para afuera, meaning from the teeth and outwards, and that means you're a hypocrite. You just say things that you don't intend to commit to keep. You're not doing things. And that's perfectly rational for somebody to just discount anything you say. Because you say all kinds of things and you don't mean them and you don't keep them and it's just nonsense. Why would anybody listen to what you say? But I just want you to know God is listening to what you say, and he sees the thoughts and intents of the heart. And when those two things come together, that you believe in your heart and then you confess with your mouth, that commitment has eternal consequences. And God says, Jesus says, I will confess you before my Father. Think about how important that is. That Jesus stand up in that day and say, he's mine. He's not going to keep quiet at that moment. What if he keeps quiet? What if you say, well, Lord, Lord, have I not prophesied in your name? Haven't I cast out devils in your name? Haven't I done many wonderful works in your name? And he doesn't confess your name. He says, I don't know you. Have we met? Whoa. That's going to be a shocker. Boy, that's going to be a surprise. I'd like to know about these people who are casting out devils in his name and doing actual wonderful works in his name. They're all over the world. They're doing them right now to this day. Been doing them all these years. Many, many, many people saying, Lord, Lord. They all know the Lord. But something's wrong with their commitment. It's something in the heart or it's something in the mouth. They've done something wrong. And God says, I don't know them. But when you get it right, when you in your heart believe and you're willing to confess him before men, even in an embarrassing situation, that's why it's important, folks. This makes an eternal difference. It's important for you to be a Christian at work. Young people, it's an important... No young people in here. I know, you're all young. It's important for you to be a Christian at school. It's important for you to be a Christian in traffic. A public, committed Christian. Now, what happens is that it causes us to become accountable. When you become a public Christian, you become accountable. Trust me. Just tell people you're a Christian and watch how you're all of a sudden accountable to everybody. I thought you were a Christian, they'd say. Yeah, well, Christians aren't perfect. We just make mistakes, you know. We're just forgiven. Well, yeah, but you're accountable. If you say you're a Christian, you're accountable. You are declaring your accountability. You're saying, I'm a Christian. I'm accountable. And that's what Jesus is saying here. What does he say? I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. Every idle word. Who wants that kind of accountability? Not one of us. We avoid accountability like the plague. We hate it when people think we're accountable. Don't you? Don't you hate it when the IRS thinks you're accountable, that you've got to give an account of all your earnings? And the IRS comes up and says, give an account. They audit you. Now, I've never been audited. I understand the reason why is because I've never made enough money for them to even bother. They think if we took everything he has, it's not going to be worth the time of actually searching out and auditing him. So why bother? And so they haven't audited me. But I know people that have been audited, and they make them give an account of everything. Everything. Every dime you make, you've got to give an account. You make a little money here, you make a little money there, you got to give an account. That means receipts are important. You say, well, what business is it of theirs? You know, they actually have scripture on their side on this. Jesus did say, you know, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. And he was talking about unfair taxes. Taxation without representation, folks. Taxation without representation. My goodness. Accountability. You hate accountability. Don't you hate the nanny state? Do you hate it? I do. I spent like 20 minutes cursing Democrats yesterday. Sorry about that. Not trying to be crude if you're a Democrat, but we needed a syringe. I usually keep syringes for different things that I do. I like to repair old bearings and stuff, and I can take a bearing that's all solid, you know, rusted, and I can clean that thing out and give it chemical washes and all that, and then inject it with nice small needles with new, fresh, high viscosity oil and turn an old bearing into something. I've got machines all over my shop that were put together from old rusted bearings. And I love it. That's my hobby. I like doing that. And so I like to have these kind of syringes, and I couldn't find one when we needed one. So I went up to the pharmacy like a dolt, thinking that I could just go in there and find out where they have them all on the shelves, and I'm looking around, and I couldn't find them for nothing. And you know, these places, you think if they're a pharmacy, they've got everything in there. They've got pet supplies and stuff. Anyway, I finally go up to the counter, and I kind of like cut in line a little bit and said, hey, can you guys just tell me where the syringes are? Why do you want one? What business is it of yours why I want one? Well, we have one, I'll give you. Okay, thank you, I'll take it. So she gave it to me. No needle. I said, well, you know, I kind of need a needle too. Why do you need a needle? I don't like people making me accountable to them. Me, I have to tell this little girl behind the counter why I need a needle. It's none of your business why I need a needle. I'm trying to fix a ball bearing. What business is it of yours? Well, you have to have a prescription to have a needle. You give me the syringe, but I can't have a needle without a prescription. What bothers me? It bothers me that I have to be accountable to these bureaucrats. It bothers me that I cannot buy a pair of glasses that I like. I have to go to a doctor for him to give me a prescription. And even if I have a legal prescription, if it's 1 year and 1 day old, they will not sell me a pair of glasses for the same prescription. And heaven forbid you want to change it, make it a little bit more powerful. No, can't do that. That's why I buy all my glasses from Hong Kong. They ship them to me FedEx right here. And I can make them any old prescription I want. Barely see any of y'all right now. But nobody's telling me what glasses I need. I'm going to decide that because I chafe at accountability. I don't want to be accountable to you people. But I am. We're accountable. We have got this thing where we have to get. Let me tell you something. You are not accountable if you don't have to give account. There has to be an accounting for there to be an accountability. If there's never a moment where you have to give an account, well, then you're not accountable. And that's why the audit is important. We have auditors take care of our books here in this church. We have auditors every year come in and say, okay, yep, this is what's a mistake here, that's a mistake there, and we get it all corrected. Why? Well, because we have to give an account. Somebody has given us stuff to do something with, and we've got to be able to show you. And what happens when somebody says, well, it cost me this much. Well, can I see a receipt? Oh, I didn't keep receipts. Well, you know why they didn't keep receipts? Because they didn't think they owed you any explanation, any accountability. I find that fascinating that we have a tendency to just dismiss this serious business of accountability. I think many times of Mephibosheth. You might know the story, and I didn't prepare for it to bring it to you and read it to you and all that stuff. It's just one of my rabbits I'm chasing. Mephibosheth was one of the sons of Saul, one of the sons of Jonathan, actually. And Jonathan had made a deal with David that, listen, whatever happens, if I die or whatever, I don't want you as a rival of my father's to kill off all my children, because that's what kings did back in those days. They had to kill off all their rivals. And so David made a promise. He made that promise. He swore that he would not kill Jonathan's children and that he would do good to them. And then when everything was settled and David was back in his place, he actually got this son of Jonathan. He found, he said, go look for his children. I'm going to do good to him because of Jonathan. Jonathan died. It was an honorable man, Jonathan. Very impressive person. And makes you wonder what God is trying to tell us in the life of Jonathan. Maybe you shouldn't be too quick to judge God on his decisions, because he's done some pretty tough stuff to other people that, you know, maybe he hasn't been all that tough on you yet. But one way or the other, God was pretty rough on Jonathan, and Jonathan died because of God's overall plan and some rejections that God had made on his father and things. But Jonathan had seen to it for his children, and David starts looking for his children. He finds one that somehow had become lame. He had fallen, or they had dropped him, or I don't know, as a child, and he was lame. He couldn't walk like the rest of us couldn't walk. And so he was lame, and he was a child of Jonathan. And so they go and they get him, and they bring him to David. Now, you can imagine Jonathan's son, rival to David. Now, David's the king, and this comes the king's officers, and they pick him up. And I can imagine him saying, hey, you don't have a right to do this. This is a free country. You'd be in a lot less trouble if you wouldn't resist the police. You get into a lot less trouble. But anyway, here come the officers, and they pick him up, and I can imagine him thinking, well, it was a good ride. I had a good time. Lord, thank you for the 15 or 20 years you've given me. But he gets to David, and David says, don't be afraid. I'm going to do you good. I'm going to take care of you. And in fact, you're going to have a seat at my table. You come and sit at my table whenever. So that whenever they had a banquet, or whether they had a day of a state day or something that they had to do, there was Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, lame but sitting at the table, David's table, fully, fully welcome, one of David's group, which is a huge story and probably needs to be delved into a whole lot. Danny, get on that, will you? Been a while since you've dealt with Mephibosheth. But anyway, after a while, David's own son rebels against him, and he goes to take over, and Absalom is looking to kill David and all of David's followers. And so David has to run for his life. The rebellion was strong, it says. It was a powerful rebellion, and David had to run for his life. And a lot of David's friends get up and leave with him. A whole lot of David's friends did that. But Mephibosheth didn't. I mean, Barzillai, and I mean, all kinds of people, they got up and left with him because they said, no, we're going to go with David. And sometimes that's the way you got to commit with Jesus. You got to get up and leave the camp and bear his reproach and go out there with him. That's a big part of committing. But anyway, Mephibosheth didn't. And when David comes back, he noticed that Mephibosheth didn't go with him. And so David says, how come you didn't go with me? He says, my servant deceived me. Ziba had gone with David and said, Mephibosheth said, now the kingdom's going to be reverted to me. And I don't know whether the story makes it clear that Mephibosheth said that or didn't say that. I don't believe he said that. I believe that Ziba was lying. But one way or the other, that's for Danny to figure out. He's going to explain it all to us one of these days. The point is that Mephibosheth, if he was lied on, he did not cover himself. He didn't bring the receipts. He didn't protect himself. He should have protected his reputation because he knew he had to give an account. And so if Ziba says, you don't need to go, I'll take care of everything, and then goes and lies to David, and now Mephibosheth loses half of his value, half of his estate and everything, because David couldn't tell who was telling the truth. And whose fault was that? Well, you have a tendency to say, well, Ziba lied. But Mephibosheth had some responsibility in that. He's got to be able to stand up and say, no, David, I've kept all the receipts. I've protected myself. Here's the account. And David, you have a right to ask me these things. You have a right to demand the receipts. I was here. I was there. I did this. I was over here. What about you? Do you have any obligation to show God some receipts? Show God some... You know what it says here? Every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. We're going to have to consider what this tells us about God. And we need to consider what it tells us about us. And then we're going to consider what it tells us about the judgment. But I want you just to consider right now what this says about our nitpicking God. You want to complain about God? Here you go. Have something. Here's God coming in saying, every idle word, give an account. Think about your idle words, folks. How are you going to give an account for some of those things? You know, the Bible says they're like madmen who say all kinds of deceit and say, am I not in sport? I'm just joking. Just kidding. Ooh. Really? Madmen throwing out arrows and firebrands and death because they say, I'm just kidding. Every idle word? I know I'm preaching to myself. I get it. You guys don't have to stare at me like that. We chafe at the government demanding us to give accountability. We chafe at the government saying, keep your receipts. Keep your receipts. They told me at the start that I had to keep my receipts for 3 years. So I've kept them for 33 years. I have every receipt that I ever bought anything for and made any kind of declaration for in my IRS thing. I got a filing cabinet full of all my receipts from 1977 to today. And one day Debbie decided she was going to clean out my... I have every bank statement that I ever got all stacked in a nice little neat row. I just kept all the receipts. Everything. You want to know what I spent in 1978 in February where I went to shop? I can tell you. And, you know, I don't know why. It's an obsession I've got. I'm sure it's some kind of a mental illness. But Debbie says, can't we get rid of these now? Can't we get rid of these now? And I said, oh, all right. And so she did. She took all those older than 7 years old. I don't know why seven, because I heard something about 7 years old. I said, well, not three. Let's go seven. Keep the last 7 years, whatever. And she stacks up all of these. You're going to throw them away. And then I went and got them out of the trash can. I had second thoughts. I went and got them out of the trash can, and I still have them. She doesn't know where they are, but I have got them. We don't like to be held accountable for all of our stuff. You know, you ever heard the statement, this is a free country? Usually it's people who are irritated that their neighbors are complaining about them. They're raising... They're breeding pit bulls in their backyard or something. And so they say, well, this is a free country. And usually this idea of a free country, I remember one news program that they had, on these base jumpers. You know what base jumpers are? They have parachutes and they jump off buildings or they jump off cliffs and they use their parachutes and they land in the park or whatever. And they think this is, you know, maybe it is. Maybe it's a real thrill. I don't know. But they jump off high things. And they were at this Yosemite cliff that's like 3,000 feet high, one of the highest cliffs in the world. And they would take videos of everything, you know, and they'd have these videos and they'd take the videos and they'd run off and say, yay, long live America or something like that. And they'd parachute down and land the thing. And then they'd get arrested because it's illegal. And so they're all saying, they're all fighting the government. They're saying, we have rights. We have rights. This is public property. We can do anything we want. And there's this lady, they got her filmed, they got her all done. She's one of the leaders of this whole movement to fight the government and all their nitpicking regulations because they can't free jump and the base jump or whatever. And she goes on there and she says, this is a free country. And she straps herself on, goes over there and runs and jumps off this cliff. Didn't open. All the way to the ground. Bang. And you know what all those folks did? They said, you know, the government was right all along. No, they blame the government because they confiscate the stuff, so they're using less than less expensive equipment, and that's the reason why she died. Because the government is so oppressive. Well, we don't like the government to tell us what we can and cannot do. This is a free country. We ought to be able to do whatever we want. And who are you to tell me that I can't buy a syringe?
I'd give you one free.
I want to buy a syringe at the pharmacy. And I'm going to campaign on this until the laws are changed. No, I know, they're trying to stop drug abuse, and drug abuse is a problem, so we got to give them some leeway. The truth is, the idea of accountability, the idea that we have to give an account to others, the idea that we have to give an account to the IRS, that bothers us. Why do they have the right to judge every single thing we do and decide whether they're going to tax us on these things or not? I don't know, I don't understand all there is about that, and I realize that there might be some justification and complaints and stuff, and I know the IRS has done some damage to people because they don't have enough oversight, and yes, there's political intrigue there, and the IRS is being used to attack patriotic groups and stuff. I've heard all this stuff, but I gotta tell you, folks, our system here in the United States is got to be one of the best that ever was, and our system of taxation is really pretty good. And I think we probably ought to complain less about these things and maybe get more interested in things that God is interested in rather than focusing on, you know, solving our IRS problems. The IRS is not our enemy. These are people trying to charge the right amount of taxes and whatever. And I know they're using it for the wrong reasons. But listen, God has given us some understanding of how things work. And you are accountable. You are accountable. When it comes to money, you're accountable to the person who prints it. Those people who print that money, they're saying, okay, you're going to use this money, you're going to use it this way. And there's all kinds of rules and regulations, and then you're going to pay a certain amount of it back. And it's going to come around and whatever, and they know what they're doing. And we have a lot of representation. So probably, and here in tax season, I know this is probably not popular, but stop complaining about the taxes you pay and realize that you are accountable to them, and keep your receipts. Keep your receipts. Hang on to them. We want to get away from the accountability. We're raised by our parents, and we chafe at the demands that our parents make, and some parents are a little bit too overprotective, and some parents are too negligent, so, you know, it balances out. On the whole, we have a more or less understanding how things ought to be. Children have to be supervised. They have to be overseen. And then eventually they're going to have to get off on their own. And you can see children, especially in spring break, how they love to be out from under their parents' control. And they go crazy. They do stupid things, and some of them are still paying for it the rest of their lives. Because they're breaking away from parents' control. And this, I guess, is just about as normal as it can be. And yet we as adults, we feel like we ought to not have to be under anybody else's control. I remember, I believe it was George Bush, when they tried to give him broccoli at some dinner or whatever, and he says, no, I don't eat broccoli. My mama forced me to eat broccoli, and now I'm an adult, and I don't eat broccoli. And of course, that got all the broccoli growers upset at him. But you know, you understand the situation. I don't want to eat broccoli, okay? Not me, personally. I love broccoli. I think it's great. But he didn't want to eat broccoli because he was forced to by his parents. That's his idea of breaking away. I do not want to be limited and controlled. But now think about what this says about God. God says, I'm giving you all kinds of stuff. And you're going to be responsible. You're going to be responsible. Look at Luke chapter 12. Look at Luke 12:48. But he that knew not and did not commit things worthy of stripes, but did commit things worthy of stripes, shall be beaten with few stripes. For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall much be required. And to whom men have committed much, of him they will ask the more. All right, think about this. God is being a little bit nitpicky. He's saying, you're going to have to give an account of all your stuff, even every idle word. And if you've been given more, I'm going to demand more from you. Wow. And this is a recurring theme in the Bible. This is all over the place. Think about the parables. We'll deal with some of them. Think about the parables. The parables are saying, God says, here, I'll give you this, I'll give you this, give you this, occupy till I come. He goes away. And they're free. When the cat's away, the mice will play, right? They get to do whatever they want. But there's an accountability. There's a day of judgment. There's a day when he comes back and he says, okay, come, give account. Well, my five gained other five. Now I have 10. Oh, well done. Well, my two and my, and then the one guy says, well, Lord, you know, I didn't lose it. I didn't pilfer it. I didn't steal it. I didn't waste it. I kept it. Here it is. He didn't say well done on that one. He said, you wicked, you evil, you lazy, you no good for nothing. Think about this from the standpoint of God. This idea of a nitpicking judgment where God says every idle word you say is going to be taken account of. And you're going to have to give an account. That's something positive on your side. You've got to keep records. You've got to bring forth the documents. You've got to explain. You've got to prove. There's no burden of proof on the state. You're not innocent till you're proven guilty. God says, you've got to prove some things. Show me. Show me what you've earned. Show me how you earned it. Prove to me that you did it all right. And you in your mind are thinking, I'm an American. God doesn't have a right to do that. He can't demand these things of us. We're free. But freedom is a limited thing. It always is a limited thing. Even in prison, you're free, at least to some degree, within your cell. They put you in your cell and say, all right, do whatever you want. Almost. Well, all right, what it says about God. All right, I'm just going to give you an overview and we'll take it up for next week. What it says about God, it says that God cares about people. Wow. He actually cares what you do. He cares about every moment of your waking life. He probably cares about your thoughts and your statements and your words. And he cares how you live your life and what you do. And he didn't say some of you. He said every single one of you, every single word. This is talking about complete, absolute everybody. God cares about people. Something about people being made in his image. He cares about history. He cares about your history. Because he's going back into the past. He's saying every idle word that's going to be taken care of in the future, history is doing something. I can't say that I know everything that it's doing, but it means something. And all these words that have been said in the past, they're going to come out. You might have questions, but there's going to be a lot of answers. Because people are going to have to give an account. And really, that's not bad. I want everybody else to have to give an account. And God cares about justice. We don't so much. We don't care about justice so much. You've heard the line that kids are complaining and fighting and the parents are just saying, stop it. And it's because parents don't care about justice. They care about quiet. That's a line from Bill Cosby. They don't care about justice. They care about quiet. We aren't so into justice, but God is. He wants everything to be lined up and perfected. That's pretty much all I got time for this morning.